I've discovered that the cats I have a bunch of code cards from all those Pokemon packs we opened, and I've just been like throwing them. And the cats love chasing the fucking throwing cards.
Hey, gotta catch them all.
Absolutely. And aren't we trying?
It certainly does sound like it.
Follow up on the Pokemon thing, and I know you weren't thinking it, but yes, I would fuck Jigglypuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's an important piece of information to have.
Would you also fuck Muk and Grimer?
You know what? Muk, not Grimer. Grimer is too small for me. I need something that can, like, I can pick up a Grimer. A Muk can suffocate me.
I mean, because a Muk is very hut-like, in the shape, the design of it.
If Grimer were the size of a Pichu, I would say yes, because then it's effectively a pocket pussy.
Would you fuck Garbodor?
What,
Oh God,
the
no, please, no.
The
That's just literal garbage.
Garbodor?
Yeah, no.
I got you. I got
Yeah,
you. I
I
got
actually
you.
don't
I
know
got
that
you.
Pokemon. I haven't played
Oh,
in a while.
here you go. Here you go. You ready?
Oh boy, yeah.
Garbodor.
Smash.
Yep. Thought so.
Oh God.
Absolutely. Smash and cook breakfast for the next day to smash again.
No walk of shame for that Garbodor, huh?
No, not one at all. You know when they say like your fucking standards are in the gutter? This is what they mean.
It has a hole and it probably breathes, so I mean, it's good enough for you, right?
If it breathe, it a thought. Everyone, and welcome to The Force Unscripted. This is our lesser done segment called Let's Talk Legends. We got our homie here, Bill, with us. He is another resident Legends expert. What's up, Bill?
Hey everybody, how are we doing today?
Fantastic. Happy to be here.
I'm glad to be back. I had fun the first time and glad to be back on the show again.
Now Happy to
you
have
got a
you.
good, yeah, you have a good mic now. It sounds fantastic. Like
Yeah.
the recording, yeah, the final, recording is going to sound really good. It's going to be great.
Yep. So, how do we want to kick this off?
All right, so as you guys know, we let Bill pick the topic. Last time we did X-Wings, had a great time, of course. As per the Force Unscripted's unscripted policy, we typically get off topic. So today's topic is we're going to basically kind of be talking about the similarities and differences, comparing and contrasting the falls of Anakin Skywalker and Jason Solo. And for those of you who have tuned in recently and caught our first verses of this season, it also happened to be about Cadus versus Anakin. And we told Bill didn't know about that. So it's funny how it kind of lines up. I was telling him about that earlier. And so I just think it's cool. So you got a versus and a Let's Talk Legends, the first of the season, matching up through the force, of course.
There we go. So the one thing, and so with the, I'm going to try very hard not to get into comparing Jason and Ben Solo because I don't really want to get into that can of worms with this because we won't be talking about Anakin for very long. But the thing between the two of them is they both have a very similar reason that they turn. Anakin wanted to protect Padme because he saw Padme dying in childbirth, and Jason believed that if he didn't kill Luke Skywalker, that the galaxy was going to turn into, basically go to hell. Even at they just had the Vong invasion. They just had, a couple other, minor things. The Empire tried to rise again, and then,
Killix.
yeah, Killix, and then, all into that. So, it's one of those. It's like, how much more chaos are you going to get in the galaxy at this point if you don't try to do the absolute stupidest possible thing you could try to do? Because at the end of Anakin's arc, and I'll get back to Anakin here in a second, at the end of Anakin's arc, you still had that one bit of redemption for Anakin's character, redeeming himself and killing Palpatine for the first time. So you have that redemption for Anakin. And, Anakin did a lot of war crimes in both the Republic and, later with the rise of the Empire and the Empire itself. But you still had that little glimmer there's some way that he could be redeemed. Luke had that hope that he could be redeemed. Throughout the whole fall of Cadus, or fall of Jason and becoming Cadus, he's trained by the girl that Luke shot down one time because the Force told him that that she was an Imperial in a comic. And yeah, I read that comic when I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and it's just like, okay, that's just a really cool story. And of course, she was an Imperial spy, but so Luke was eventually, you know, exonerated of it. But apparently, you know, her TIE fighter being destroyed didn't actually kill her, and she comes back as a Sith Lord with, and she wants revenge on Skywalker also. Which that's another interesting thing about the legends of how many women in Luke's life come back that want to kill him. And
I mean, Abeloth was a fucking nightmare for him. All his exes came back with a vengeance.
Yeah. So he's kind of shaky on, you know, the ex-girlfriend thing. And then, so Jason goes and does, outside of actually, you know, killing Luke, because, you know, Cadus wanted to kill Han and Leia as his, you know, I'm committing and turning to the dark side thing. And she says, okay, do you still really love them though? And then he's like, well, she's like, yeah, that's what I thought. Go pick somebody else. And then, you know, he kills Mara. And so, you know, your goal is if you're trying not to kill Luke Skywalker, but you're going to kill his wife. You try to turn his son to the dark side. And then when you can't, you torture the shit out of him. Can I say shit?
Yes, you can say whatever the fuck you want, man.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. But, you know, you have the whole, he tries to take over the New Republic again. So throughout his arc, there's no way you can see him redeeming himself, because everything he's doing is basically, there's no way he can step back from what he's done. You know, Anakin did a lot of bad stuff, but, you know, eventually he stepped back and you know, he killed Palpatine.
Didn't murder his aunt.
Yeah, did not murder his aunt either.
I love the part about Jason's story where he basically takes a loophole, has a droid exploit the loophole, and then creates a triumvirate in the Galactic Senate and becomes basically the head of it, which I thought that was some real evil man. He was like, he was brutal like Anakin was, but he had I wouldn't say he's as smart as Palpatine, but he had those political machinations like Palpatine had, and I thought that was cool.
Well, I think that also throws back to, you know, his earlier story where he was kind of like the warrior philosopher kind of thing. So, you know, he had that ability to step back and see, you know, bigger picture. He could play chess a little bit further ahead than most people could. And I think that's an interesting way to throw back to, you know, what he was trying to learn when he was doing the, should we kill, you know, should we, you know, that whole thing. During Vong, or was it pre-Vong, where he was doing the philosopher thing?
That was post-Vong.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, I think that kind of throws back to that as well, because it shows that he thinks things through. He doesn't just act on impulse. Anakin did not think things through hardly
no
ever.
Absolutely.
And
not.
But
as we stated earlier, twice the pride, double the fall.
Yeah, exactly. So even before Anakin fell, you know, Anakin was, whether he was a Jedi or Sith, he was an embodiment of rage. He just was. And the only thing that could help keep him under control was Padme. And we know how that story ended.
So
it
didn't
work out.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Bill. So you mentioned that while Anakin was redeemable and was redeemed, and Cadus is more irredeemable, even considering that, do you think that either of them were justified in what they did?
I think, to quote a famous philosopher, from a certain point of view, I think Anakin's, I don't know about his fall being justified, but his is more, it's easier to see happening. I mean, you see the same thing with Jason, that he was worried about his wife and his child being saved as well. But Jason was focused on one person. Anakin was out to destroy all of the Jedi. And, you know, I think Jason went too far with it, because I think if he hadn't have done the whole, I'm going to take over the government and, you know, continue to build up the Sith and his army and all of what he was building up to do that with. Yeah, you know, if he hadn't have done that, I think he would have had a better chance to probably, you know, If his goal was to kill Skywalker, I think not turning the galaxy against him and making Skywalker point a spearhead straight at his chest would be, I don't know. I can see up and downs for both sides. I think Anakin's is probably more relatable for most people. I think that may be the thing with Jason is, he becomes basically a young Palpatine, and his mentor wasn't as helpful to him as what, you know, Palpatine was to training Vader. But, you know, having a suit that tortures you every day, you know, that
yeah, I was gonna say helpful is kind of subjective, but I mean, it did you know, he did become more powerful.
See, here's well, like my take on the situation though. Like, so I think that, starting with Anakin, I think that Anakin's everything is unjustified, like, in my personal opinion, just because, like, the betrayal for Obi-Wan, the betrayal to the Jedi Order, he ends up being one of the reasons Padme dies anyway. He kills younglings, he goes on grand galactic atrocities for 20 years, and in the end, all he does is did what he was originally supposed to do, which was bring balance to the Force. Now, depending on your interpretation, like killing the Jedi and then killing the big bad that was responsible for the fall of the Jedi, that could be seen as taking balance, like bringing balance to the Force. But like, at the end of the day, he still did what he was, you know, brought into the world to do, which was bring balance to the Force as the chosen one.
Yeah.
I think that like, that shouldn't get a pat on the back. Like, sure you did, but you did great wrong. Like, sure you ended up doing what you're supposed to do, but you did great wrong. When you compare it to Jason, I think that Jason's goal was definitely more of the redeemable side than Anakin's was, because at the end of the day, his goal was to make sure that his child was like the child that was the queen of the Jedi and not the queen of the Sith. And this goes back to the argument that me and Winchy had when we were talking about, like, you know, who was the real chosen one. And I was like, it's always been Anakin. And he brought up a point, well, what if it was Alana? And because she was the queen of the Jedi, you know, the prophecy could have, you know, been about someone else in the line. And like, we ended up coming back and agreeing that the chosen one is Anakin. But like, in Jason's eyes, the chosen one might have been Alana, and Alana being queen of the Jedi, it seems like an overall good thing, especially when you compare it to the other reality, which is her being queen of the Sith. And that's something that he, as a Sith, didn't want to see. So I think that that is definitely more justifiable than the murder and pillage of the galaxy at large to bring balance to the Force. Like, that's just my opinion on it.
With the bringing balance to the Force thing, I always put this towards, you know, obviously we know other Jedi survived Order 66 because, you know, you got to have more Jedi to tell stories with. But at the point of in Revenge of the Sith, when Anakin basically they wiped out the Jedi, he brought balance to the Force, because there were two Jedi and two Sith. You had Yoda and Obi-Wan is basically the only Jedi left, and you had Palpatine and now Vader. So he did do exactly what the prophecy said he was going to do.
Yeah, that's not a take we actually have looked at before. We didn't really, because they've made so many more Jedi survive since the original stuff, you know. But yeah, as in the original, yeah, it makes sense. There are two Jedi left, and
I never thought about it like that. Fuck. You have that's a good point. That, yeah.
As far as the scope of what Vader and Palpatine knew after Order 66, the only two that survived were Obi-Wan and Yoda. You know, they knew others escaped because, you know, you have the Inquisitors and all the search for the Jedi
My only point of contention with the point you're making, though, is that, like, Force users are not the only influence on the balance of the Force.
Yes, I agree. And a different topic, but, you know, the Force Witches of Dathomir. That was one thing that I found very interesting, is because they came up EU and then they flushed them out more in Clone Wars. But the Force Witches are an interesting way to bring in, you know, other types of Force users.
You can't bring up Force Witches. That makes the fucking fandom go crazy.
Oh, sorry.
They're still mad about the Acolyte.
Okay, well.
No, it's okay. Bring it up. Make them mad. Please. I mean, make them mad.
This wouldn't be the first time I pissed somebody off, so with the Star Wars take, so I'm sure it won't be the last. That was one of the first ones that were, you know, you see the Force being used by people outside of, you know, organized people outside of, like, Jedi Sith, or, you know, just like random, you know, kid who's Force aware, or, you know, whoever else.
And, you know, I like that you mentioned that, too, because you think about, just back to the story of, like, Luke and Jason, like, Luke had a stint when he was on his little Force pilgrimage with the Fallen Asi. Jason did the same thing, following in his footsteps. And I definitely think that meeting those different cultures in the Force is how Jason ends up coming to the conclusions that he does.
Lumia also kind of, you know, poisoned the visions that Jason was having too, though. So it wasn't like, yeah, you know, and that's one thing with both Jason and Anakin is that to a certain extent, both of them were manipulated into it. I mean, yes, it was a choice that they made, but they were manipulated into the choices that, you know, they didn't really have a whole choice based on the manipulation that they were subjected to and fell for. And Anakin was, you know, he had problems with the Jedi, particularly after Ahsoka. Do we like Ahsoka still, or is Ahsoka, do we not like Ahsoka?
Oh, I love Ahsoka.
We love Ahsoka. Okay, yeah,
good, because I've always liked Ahsoka's character, because she just snapped back at Anakin every time that she could. And you know, the thing where she gets accused of the bombing at the Jedi Temple, and then, you know, the Jedi are ready to just to hang her out to dry regardless, and then they find out, oh yeah, you actually are innocent. They're like, hey, we want you to come back. Like, she's like, nah, I'm out. And, you know, Anakin has to watch her walk away. He definitely had some disillusionment with the Jedi, but he was never close to doing what he did without Palpatine finally giving him the push of, like, I can save Padme from death after, you know, he tells him that he had a Force vision.
Anakin was groomed by that man and manipulated by a person. Jason, I feel like, was manipulated by circumstance.
Jason was like, manipulated by the Fountain of Knowledge.
I know, the Fountain of Knowledge and Lumia for sure, but like after the torture that he goes through and being severed from the Force by Vergaer, and then going on like a 5-year stint to search for answers, he was in such a state to be molded by whoever could push him with the strongest hand that when Lumia comes into play, like it was just easy for her. Like Palpatine spent years getting the influence on Anakin that he had, but like Jason walked right into Lumia, and Lumia was just it was easy for her. I feel like there's a lot of difference in what goes into their manipulation. Like Anakin was in a prime spot because he was snatched from his mama, he was forced into a bunch of rules that were counter to how he wanted to live his life, and then a guy comes in after getting close to him over years and then saying, hey, I have the answer to all the problems that you're looking for, the Jedi fucking suck, come with me. That's different from, oh shit, extra galactic force has come and rampaged my fucking galaxy. I got kidnapped and now I'm fucking being tortured without the force. Oh god, I have all these fucking questions, come back. Oh, you have the answers? This is what, you know, like the person who tortured me, like she basically, what's the syndrome called? Is it Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah, Stockholm mm-hmm. syndrome.
Yeah. So he's just like, ah, yeah, this is clearly what was supposed to happen. It's just, I like the two stories. I like putting them side by side and seeing the differences and similarities. I'm so glad you picked this topic.
Oh yeah, I do too. I like the story. I the one thing that I will give them that they did not do with the story was the person to kill Cadus was not Luke, and Jaina was the one that had to do it. Because Skywalker was too much, you know, Jason was too focused on Skywalker for Skywalker to be able to do it, where Jaina could get close to him to be able to do it. But
Luke also, I mean, he flat out said, like, if I go after Jason, I'm going to fall to the dark side because I have so much, you know.
But even Luke, then, Luke did, and this is when I will draw back to The Last Jedi for this with Luke. Luke went just pure, I'm going to fuck with your head every chance I get, after he found out that he was the one that murdered Mara. And Luke didn't have to go after him with a lightsaber, because Luke was going after him probably harder than Jaina did with when they were fighting. The big picture of it is, you know, the power that Luke has to, you know, project himself through the Force. He did the same thing with Kylo back in Last Jedi, when Kylo tells all his walkers to fire on him and Luke just kind of like dusts the dirt off of his shoulder. But he did that kind of stuff to Jason pretty much anytime he could. And, you know, Luke absolutely was going to fall if he did, because, you know, he killed his wife, he tortured his son, he tried to turn his son first, and he tortured his son. Like, yeah, it's pretty much like, sorry nephew, you're gonna go. I think whenever Luke killed Lumia the for the last time, that was where Luke realized that he was going to lose control if he fought Jason, because he basically is like, there wasn't even a contest that Lumia was dead. I mean, it wasn't even, I mean, she had the Force whip and she had all the other stuff that she had, and it didn't matter. Skywalker just like, you're dead now. You know, it's one
I
of
mean
those
he had that, her he had her number. Like, he had already all the Shoto saber stuff. Like, he knew how to fight that bitch.
Oh, yeah. I would put that, if I was going to put a style to that fight is Darth Maul and Obi-Wan on Tatooine in season 3 of Rebels, where Maul finally died.
Absolutely.
And it's like, Obi-Wan's like, dude, you're already dead. I already know. Do we really need to do this? And that was basically the kind of fight that when you visualize that fight with him and Lumia, that's what he's like, I'm not playing with you anymore. And I think it was going to be like that, but worse with Jason. And Luke had already had problems with being tempted by the dark side. So I'm not going to say Luke was like the Hulk there, where he was always angry and he knew how to control it. But Luke had plenty of bouts with the dark side to know that, okay, if I do this, bad shit's going to happen. That was one thing that I liked. If it ended up that Luke killed, if he killed Cadis, that you would lose some of the impact of the ending of the book that you get with Jaina having to be the one to kill him.
And the one thing that I loved about it being Jaina was, if you go back, I believe it's the end of the Young Jedi Knights, or either, yeah, it's either the end of the Young Jedi Knights or the start of the New Jedi Order. No, it is the end of the Young Jedi Knights, when Jaina and all of them, Lowy, Jason, Tennel Kaw, they all get knighted. Luke calls her the Sword of the Jedi, and it's such an awkward moment because Jaina's like, why did he say that? And then for her to take up that mantle and be the one to put an end to her brother, and then being the one at the end of Fate of the Jedi to finally become a master as the Sword of the Jedi, I feel like that little bit that we get when she's knighted comes to full circle multiple times in the Legends timeline. That's why I like the fact that she was the one to kill Jason.
Yeah.
Because when she kills Jason, that's like the first time she truly is like the Sword of the Jedi. When has she ever had to take down a Sith? Like, I understand she fought in the Yuuzhan Vong War, but, you know, Jedi and Sith are mortal enemies. Like, she is now officially the Sword, and then it comes to full circle when she has to fight, you know, this great dark side entity known as Abeloth. So it's just, it's great. I love the story of all the solo siblings. Poor Anakin.
Throwback to my boy Soontra Fell from my last show. His boy ends up with Jaina too. Props to him.
I thought I hate his name. I hate his fucking
Jagged.
Name.
Jagged Fell. Yes. I think probably it's supposed to be like a Germanic thing where it's like Jagged. Yeah.
And I do, you know, as much as I hate his name, I do love his character, like with the whole Chiss and Empire background and all that shit. Like, they had some really good fucking stories and character development Legends that just has not been there for me in Disney.
Well, the thing is that a lot of those characters played long story arcs for a lot of those characters. You know, you had two of the guys from Ray Squadron were still active in New Republic intelligence through Vong and through New Jedi Order. So, I mean, you have a lot of characters who have long stories with them. That's one of those ones I thought was really cool that they kept around as long as they did. And as much as I hate the character of Corran Horn with an absolute fucking passion,
Talk about my hero, I Thor, like that. We do not sham Corran Horn in this house, sir.
Look, I think I said this before. If there's any beef that I have with it with the X-Wing books, it is the fact that Thakpol inflicted Corran Horn. And then later, iJedi on the EU. But
you know, I'll give you the X-Wing stuff. But post that, we do not sham Corran Horn. I'm sorry. The hero of iThor has to go through his shit with Jacilla and Valen. We don't. No. I'm sorry, sir. He may not be the best dad in the Star Wars universe, but that's him. That's him.
Okay, if you can't tell, he has a Corran boner. He brings up Corran all the time.
I can tell. And that's another reason. You know, did you all ever play the X-Wing miniatures game?
The tabletop?
Yeah, the tabletop.
I played it like once on the tabletop simulator, but okay. Never actually on the table.
Yeah. Well, in that game, Corran was in an E-Wing. He was just so absolutely broken of a pilot. You know how much Corran hates smugglers?
Yes.
The main list that people play with Corran Horn was Dash Rendar.
Why Dash?
Yeah. Just because he was a good tank for him. The YT-1200 was a good tank vessel. It was a good tank ship for it. There was game effects he could do that like make Khorne even more stupid. But no, I'll tell you, the point that I fell off with Khorne Horn, the first time I read X-Wing, I thought he was the obligatory Force-sensitive pilot. So, you know, he's cool. Whenever we got to iJedi and the scene where he shows up to the Jedi Praxium and he basically starts telling Luke everything he's doing wrong, and Luke basically goes, yeah, you're right, I'm fucking everything up, I'm gonna, like, no, that's not gonna happen. No, you're giving too much agency to a character over
the main character.
Yeah, over main character. And
but Luke needed that kind of stuff like that early on. Come on.
But Khorne has no clue what he's talking about as far as like how to run the Jedi Praxium. That whole part of it. And then the other part of it where he like goes into, you know, like bounty hunting for a whole year while his wife is still in captivity and nothing happens to her. And the first person narrative didn't really work for
blame for Stackpole, not Khorne Horn.
I also didn't like the first person thing. I have actually talked to Michael Stackpole on Blue Sky. Yeah, he wrote a lot of the early fiction for the BattleTech universe. And so there's so much of that shit that he wrote that is actually now like rules in the game because of the fact how nuclear engines explode in ways that can't actually happen in reality in BattleTech all the time. It's called the Stackpole because that's how the thing explodes. I've actually talked to him on Blue Sky before. So I have no problem with Michael Stackpole. As far as that character goes, yes. The overall arc of iJedi just did not work for me. If I offend you with the two words that I'm about to say, then I profusely apologize for calling him a Mary Sue. Because that is exactly what he is, and that is exactly what Stackpole does in every series he ever writes, is there is a Mary Sue in there that he is inserting himself into it. And he admits it. Not that Khorne was a Mary Sue, but he does do that. Mary Sues are fine. It's just he was too over the top of the Mary Sue. He's telling Luke what's what with the Jedi. He's telling how he like, I don't like being trained this way. I should be trained this way. Well, you're being trained as a Jedi. You're not being homeschooled. By that point, Luke had recovered a good bit of the Jedi, you know, teaching and stuff, and he was trying to learn from that. And yeah, no, Luke was not perfect as the teacher running the temple. You know, at the end, because at first he was trying to teach people how to use the Force. He wasn't trying to teach them how to be Jedi Knight. Like you brought up at the end of Young Jedi Knights, he had transitioned into that. He realized he wasn't training Force users. He was training people. He was teaching people. He wasn't necessarily teaching the Force. He was teaching them how to be Jedi Knight. And being a Jedi Knight is not being, I know how to use the Force. Is you know how to use the Force in the ways that, you know, the Jedi follow.
No, but, I got you.
And you are correct. He does go through it, and his children go through it, and his wife goes through it. But also, her dad is one of the funniest characters in the EU, Booster.
I love Booster Tarek with my whole heart. Mm-hmm. Fucking red-ass, pimped-up Star Destroyer. The Air Adventure, baby. I would salute to that ship any day.
Yeah, he's a boisterous old pirate. That's all he is. He's got his big ship to run his smuggling operation from. And I love really the... Yeah, we did.
It's okay. That's what it's for. We're unscripted for a reason.
But I do also like, you know, with Booster, I do like how much he bent the old Republic over to the new Republic over to rebuild the Star Destroyer after the Thrawn crisis. Bill Eblis wanted him to take him into Bash, and he's like, this is a one way trip, and Booster's like, you're putting guns on this thing before we go because we're going to protect these people, and he's like, I can't put guns. It's like, you're putting the guns on this thing or we don't go. Well, okay.
Fucking love Booster. Yeah. Oh, also, fun fact. There was one, I forget what episode we were recording, but I mentioned Garm Bell Iblis, and when she goes, I don't know who that is. And I was just aghast.
Wow. Okay.
Look, man, I read this shit when I was like 10. I can't always remember the character names and shit. I'm old-ish, sort of. Bro, not in comparison, but like, I feel old. Okay, you think I care about Corellians? You see my profile picture?
Whatever. Whatever.
You think I'm focusing on the Corellians?
Yes.
No.
There's Corellian Mandalorians.
Okay. And?
That means you gotta like Corellians.
No, that means I like the Mandalorians who happen to come from Corellia.
Oh, did you just say Corellia?
Yes, I did.
That's all I needed to know.
Yep. See, I don't care.
Can't believe you call yourself a Star Wars fan and don't know who Garm Bell fucking Iblis is.
I can't believe that you still want to fuck a Hutt, but here we is.
You know what? I have no rebuttal to this.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, he's got you in a corner there.
It's just so slimy. Come on, I'm justified. I'm more justified than Anakin or Jason was.
I don't know. We're gonna.
Okay, wait, hold on. No. You're gonna sit there and you're gonna tell me that the slaughter of innocent children is more justifiable than fucking a slimy Hutt? You're gonna sit there and say that, both of you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say that.
I might.
I'll go on record now. Yeah, I'll say that.
Well, I would rather kill innocent children over just have a great sexual experience. You heard it here, folks.
Well, I'm not.
Fuck
I'm not
them 100%, kids.
I'm not 100% sure about your 100%. I need. I kind of need to see the work on the math of the 100% there. But
I can give you the math.
I mean, that's okay.
It's 69 plus 69.
I think you should probably look into that homeschooling stuff Bill was just talking about.
Shut the fuck up.
You know, to go back to our Jason Anakin thing.
Yeah, back to what we were originally talking about.
Yeah, so, you know, we were talking about how Anakin had that, like, redemption moment where he kills Palpatine and, like, okay, he brings balance to the Force. I liked Jason's, like, single paragraph of redemption more than I liked Vader's redemption arc, the entire thing, because like we were saying, I never felt like Anakin's fall was truly justifiable. Like, he just does bad shit out of the blue, and we get like more context in the Clone Wars, but I mean it really was just a flip of the switch, let's murder some children to save my wife.
Here's the problem with that, because I know exactly where the problem with Anakin and Revenge of the Sith comes from. If you read the novelization of it, it's got a bunch of scenes in it that were either cut or never filmed. They were in the script, but they were never filmed. That gets into the fall of Anakin more than what you see in the film. But once you read the book and then you watch the film, I'm not trying to say this is like 2001 A Space Odyssey, where you can't understand why the monkeys are trying to kill each other and then suddenly we're in space. But the book has more context and gets more into stuff around Anakin's fall that they don't do in the film. Like, there's more of the mindset of what is going through. And part of this is the book. The book was written off of the script, but, you know, part of it was, at the time, you know, Hayden wasn't that good of an actor to be able to pull off a lot of what he was doing, because the only way you can see it is through his emotion and his actions. But
wait, pause. No. You can't shit on Horan and then come for my boy Hayden next. No. In episode 3, I loved the fact that he talked the way he did towards the end of the movie, because he is mirroring Vader's cadence in a human voice.
I'm talking about what led the part of the story that leads up to him falling, and, you know, him, the decision that, you know, he's going to, you know, cut Mace Windu's arm off to keep him from killing Palpatine.
You thought there was a problem with the acting?
You see the decision point, but there's more turmoil in him even at that point. Yeah, he does it, but he does it basically out of reflex. He doesn't do it because he knows he needs to keep Palpatine alive, and the only way he can do that is cutting his arm off. But there's still the turmoil. He's like, he knows this is a point of no return, and if he takes this step, it's stuff that if it would have been filmed and if it would have been in the movie, it would have been better. That was also where you got the deleted scene that Luminara gets killed on Grievous's ship. That was part of that one script, and I think it actually was filmed, but they cut it because they didn't want to actually show her being killed on screen. So that's one of the things that kind of led to confusion. It's like, wait, Luminara is alive? I thought she was killed, you know, with the novelization. There's just something that happened. Her death just happens off screen because she was killed, you know, in the book, and they just didn't film it. But no, the book of Sith, I think, fills in a lot of the blanks with Anakin. Now, I'll say this. I think Clone Wars, it took the story that they couldn't tell in the films and at least got to tell it to a certain degree.
you know, the thing I loved about Jason's end, I mean, he had to die, right? Like, Jason right. needed to go. That, and we all knew it was coming, so it wasn't, you know, anything crazy. But this whole time, he's been working towards a situation where his daughter isn't vilified, right? He wants to build a galaxy, maybe not a better galaxy, because, I mean, shit, look at all what he did. It's a galaxy. He's trying to build it where his daughter is safe and can grow and become, you know, the person that she wants to be versus, like, what the Force told him, quote unquote, that she was going to be. And so at the very end, when Jaina's right about to kill him and he could save himself, like, he totally has the capability to bring his lightsaber up and block it, right? But he takes that, like, half second to warn Tennel Ka
right.
that the nanovirus is coming to kill her and his daughter. He takes that half second to warn them, knowing that he's gonna die, because this whole time, everything has been about his daughter. And I loved that so much more, and because the journey was so much longer, and he went to all these places to learn about the Force, to grow, all that stuff, I felt it was much more, like, it flowed better with his whole story. That at the very end, you know, he sacrifices himself to save his daughter. Versus Vader, who killed his wife, almost killed his son, you know, killed half the galaxy. He was on the Death Star when it blew up Alderaan, which is, you know, where his daughter was from, mostly. And, okay, yeah, at the very end, he picks up the big bad dude that's been torturing him for 20 years and throws him into, a reactor well. That's cool, but also, like, he could have just done that because he was mad, right? Like, it's been 20 years of torture, and he finally has an opportunity to just off the dude, and so he takes it. And then he's like, okay, you know, tell your sister, blah, blah, whatever, right? That whole thing, like, if he fell to the dark side because he wanted to save Padme, he shouldn't have done any of that shit. Whereas Jason, he never fought, you know, Tennel Ka. He didn't try to kill Tennel Ka. He didn't force choke her out. Like, he cared about them.
He had compassion. Don't kink shame Anakin.
I'm not kink shaming Anakin. I never said it was a bad thing. I'm just saying,
in fact,
like,
he calls Anakin a pocket pussy more often than not.
Yeah, that is true. I do. Like, Jason, I felt like they did his arc better than they did Vader's. Even if you, like, even with the novelization, I feel like he had a better ending, a more satisfying ending for the character than Vader ever did.
Well, yeah, because, like, Jason got tortured, went on a pilgrimage, came back, and did all that shit. Whereas, like, in Anakin's story, honestly, like, there was a little bit of buildup, but it was honestly, like, and the next day he was Vader. It's just really quick.
Yeah, we get, like, 50 years of books and everything, you know, with Jason, him growing, him developing, like, everything. And Vader was a pocket pussy, and then, you know, he was the bad guy. I liked Jason's, and I love that Jaina trained with the Mandalorians. You know, that was already a selling point for me.
Yeah.
Of course I did, obviously, yeah. You know, and we got Barden and we got our boy Cad back. Like, that whole arc was so much more satisfying and enjoyable to me than going back and trying to slog through the Revenge of Sith novelization, for instance.
That's right. For me, when I read the book and then I saw everything that it filled in, it kind of pissed me off that this wasn't in the story on the screen, because all of this would have made it work so much better as just a story. It was already like was it longest Star Wars movie at that time? I don't remember what the runtime of
I think it was.
Yeah. Fact check, Big Bupio. Can we get a runtime on episode 3?
He's ready.
Episode 3, with runtime is 2 hours 20 minutes.
Adding in another 10 or 15 minutes of story that, you know, just fills in a little bit more of the background that leads up to it. It gets into the desperation that Anakin started to feel about trying to be able to save Padme. And
yeah, because it really hones in on the fact that, like, that dude was getting no sleep. Like, none. Yeah. Like you knew he had that one sleepless night, and he kind of mentions it in the movies, but, like, the book really, like he was just not sleeping.
Yeah, and, you know, he was a child soldier. alternative things that may not necessarily seem, you know, we're gonna drop three battalions of clones on a planet, and you know, maybe half of one's coming out of it. You know, that tends to wear on you after a while, and then you know, you're not sleeping, and you got some dude whispering in your ear. It's like, hey, all your fears you have about your wife, I got your back, homie. And then you know, they go to Cirque du Soleil for some reason. For me, that was as much out of place as the casino in Last Jedi was.
Oh, Canto Blight.
Yeah.
Oh, but you know what?
There's no L in it. Oh. It's Bite.
Oh, well, Canto Bite. I'm sorry. But I like the Cirque du Soleil scene because we get the Plagueis the Wise quote. God, you just got me fucking up words now, Winchy. Fuck you.
Well,
that's a you problem.
Caused by you.
But you could have told that. You could have told that same story on the bridge of a Star Destroyer. You could have told that in his office. They could have been sitting down drinking whiskey. They literally could have been anywhere else besides watching, you know, Cirque du Soleil in a bubble.
I think that it plays to Palpatine's hand because he's the Supreme Chancellor. You know, if he's out in an event like that, he's being watched. His people or people who pay attention to him are seeing like, hey, this one person who is the hero of the fucking Clone Wars is with me in public at an event because we're close like that. I think that it works in Palpatine's favor, honestly. I think that it's a masterful play by him.
Okay. The extravagance of it would fit with, you know, the office and all that. So yeah, I can see that point. For me, it was so jarring of it. It's like, okay, that's out of left field.
I bet you Palpatine, because, you know, he's a xenophobe. I bet you he's just sitting there thinking about all the ways he could murder all those, like, you know, exotic dancers in the bubbles. He's like, man, if I just one force lightning, it's gonna arc between all those bubbles. I can just kill them all right now. He's probably just there, you know, having a little hate boner in his brain. And then Anakin shows up and he's like, you know what? I'm going to try and get this kid in my corner, right?
I don't think Disney has really just brought over as a whole from, I think Disney dropped that whole aspect of the Empire.
Well, I will say that like Andor did a good job at maybe not showing the xenophobia and the racism, but like definitely the misogyny in the story of Deidre in Andor, because she's a woman trying to climb the, you know, the imperial bureaucracy, and she's got her ops basically like, hey, you should, I think one guy says a quote like, you gotta stabilize the ladder before you try to climb it or something. So I don't think it's out of the picture yet, but you're right. They definitely haven't like honed in on it as much as it was in Legends.
Yeah. Was it the Bad Batch where they had the one where the Empire went back there to start taking Wookiees as slaves? Was that in the Bad Batch?
Yep. It was. Yeah.
So, I mean, you have that, but it's like, you know, it's not really as essential to the story anymore. Well,
thank you guys for being here. You know, we've had our guest Bill here before, and he's back, and we're going to get him back again. So look forward to having Bill here again. We're also going to have some more guests here the rest of the season. So stay tuned for that. And thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure to like, subscribe, hit that bell, follow us on all the socials, Blue Sky, Twitter, formerly known as X, YouTube, the website, Instagram. And make sure you drop your reviews and your comments, anything you want us to answer, or maybe even play a voice recording on the podcast. We have that ability on the website. Check that out, and thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time.
Yep, nice being on. Talk to you all later.
May the Force be with you, everyone. Thank you for being here.